Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today, Newark Today host Michael Hill chats with Democratic New Jersey U.S. Senator Cory Booker about the Gateway Tunnel funding fight.
This is a bipartisan project, resources approved in a bipartisan manner by Congress, that for no good reason he is now attacking. He is hurting working people of our region.
WBGO's Kenneth Burns reports on concerns that the legacy of Whitesboro, New Jersey could be fading from Cape May's historical map.
The problem is, if the tax map's been changed over time, you could have a big discrepancy in the tax record and what's actually in your deed.
And I'll chat with Nanny Assis and Bobby Sanabria about the big event Afro Jobin with Ron Carter coming up this Tuesday at Dizzy's Club.
And this lineup of 24 is like a dream lineup.
All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. New Jersey U.S. Senator Cory Booker has been a vocal opponent of President Donald Trump, and recently the withholding of funds for the Gateway Tunnel Project connecting New Jersey and New York has prompted more criticism from the Democratic senator, who spoke this week on Newark Today with host Michael Hill.
What's going on here? I think this is the President of the United States really just trying to target for unacceptable political reasons the most important infrastructure project in our country that affects the area that produces more than 20% of our GDP. It was responsible for literally millions of people, their economic well-being, and he's attacking it. This is a bipartisan project, resources approved in a bipartisan manner by Congress, that for no good reason he is now attacking. He is hurting working people of our region, and frankly, over 1,000 people that are right now employed on that job who are out of work right now. And the project costs are going up in the millions as he is causing these delays.
Do you have any doubt that this project will go forward, that the completion will take place?
I believe we're going to win in court. I believe that this kind of cruel and craven attack on the project ultimately will be beat back, but at what cost? Every single day of delay, as I said, is costing millions and millions of dollars to taxpayers and hurting. I stood with a bunch of the men and women, the union folks that are out there that are doing this work, not just because of the paycheck and their families, but the pride, the American flags that we're waving out there, that they know they're at work on this vital infrastructure project for the United States of America. Let me just give you an example. The Chinese have high-speed rail going up, thousands and thousands of miles. Mm-hmm. They are eclipsing us. Even in places like Europe, they have high-speed rail projects that are advancing populations and helping their economy. This is the most busiest rail corridor in all of North America. And this is a president that is choking this project and making it more difficult for Americans to compete. The workers know what's at stake. Why doesn't the president stand with the workers?
And you got to scratch your head. He's from this area. He's from New York.
Yeah, but I've been fighting in the Senate because it's not just this infrastructure project. I'm really proud. The last 6 years, no senator can say this, that they've brought back more money than we've been able to bring back in the last 6 years to the state of New Jersey for our local police departments and for our hospital systems. But now the president is trying to claw back this money. I was a key negotiator for the first gun safety bill we did in 30 years in the Senate, and it got a lot of money to violence prevention programs in New Jersey. I'm so proud of those grants. As soon as he got in, he started freezing them. So I don't know why he's targeting our communities like he is, but I've been getting into fights on the Senate floor because he's freezing grants to states like Illinois, California, New York, and New Jersey. But not freezing those grants to red states. He's pitting Americans against each other, and this is just wrong, and that's why I have been fighting like hell in the Senate.
Word came down on Friday that construction of the new Hudson River Rail Tunnel between the Garden State and New York will indeed resume this week. You can hear the entire Newark Today show at wbgo.org/news. We now turn to Whitesboro, New Jersey, a historically black community in Middle Township. The community was formed in 1901 by several prominent black leaders of the day. The group of residents has been coming across discrepancies between the deeds they hold and what is on file with the township. They have two concerns: that the discrepancies will cause problems down the line when their property is passed on to family members. Also, they're concerned that the legacy of Whitesboro is fading from Cape May County's historical map. WBGO's Kenneth Burns reports.
Shirley Green is the executive director of the Whitesboro Historical Foundation and Museum. In her living room, she has set up a traveling exhibit. It starts in 1901 with Marcus Scull, the editor of the Cape May Herald.
He campaigned to remove the African-American residents from Cape May City. He said in order to get back to the glory of the Civil War days, pre-Civil War, they had to rid this city of the African-American people.
George White, a former congressman from North Carolina turned Philadelphia banker, bought the land, which became Whitesboro through his company. It would be a safe haven community for Black people where they can be self-reliant. More than a century later, Whitesboro's location, a 15-minute car trip from the Wildwoods, attracted real estate investors starting in the mid-2000s, according to Green. Then last year, as she was preparing to put the foundation and museum into a trust, a friend who was assisting her discovered a discrepancy with the deed for the museum.
Shell says, you need to go down to that county and see what's going on. That's when we found out the lot and the block number was changed.
It wasn't just the museum. It also wasn't just the other properties that Green owned. Bobby Harrison is another longtime Whitesboro resident. One day, Green asked him about the deed to his property.
I said, well, I don't know. I said, I guess it's good. I guess it's okay. I didn't take time to look into it. I bought the house and that was it.
Harrison let Green examine his deed.
I found out I had like almost like three addresses. Three zip code, put it that way. One in the village, one in the courthouse, the other one in Whitesboro.
The deeds Green is coming across vary. Some have lot and block numbers on them. Others have more information, such as a description of the property and how the lines are drawn. Timothy Dugan is chairman of the Eminent Domain and Property Valuation Group at the law firm Stark & Stark. He says all deeds are kept on record with Cape May County, but tax assessors who are independent of the municipality have their own version of property maps, which may differ.
The problem is, if the tax map's been changed over time, you could have a big discrepancy in the tax record and what's actually in your deed.
That could lead to bigger issues when there is a property line dispute or when a mortgage lien is being placed on the deed. Dugan says those liens use the description of the property found on the deed. He adds those descriptions become more important as deeds are transferred over time.
If it was just a reference to a tax map, then you have a problem if that map is now different.
Officials with Middle Township said they have not received any concerns from residents in Whitesboro about deed discrepancies. But Green says that is not the case.
They said that they were told by the state to make adjustments. I said, well, do you have a number somewhere I can call the state people to find out what is, you know, what? Oh, no, we don't have the number.
The historic preservation work that Green is leading has the goal of making sure Whitesboro's legacy and the town itself is still around. Ultimately, she would like to see Whitesboro as its own incorporated town. The last time there was talk of incorporation was nearly a century ago. It was overwhelmingly rejected because of concerns that there would not be enough tax revenue to sustain incorporation. For the WBGO Journal, I'm Kenneth Burns in Cape May County.
A wonderful celebration is happening on Tuesday, February 24th at Dizzy's Club. Nanny Assis, Afro Joe Beam with Ron Carter. And joining us to talk about this exciting musical event is indeed the musical director, Brazilian-American singer and percussionist, Nanny Assis. Nanny, great to see you.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. Good to see you too.
And also joining us is Grammy-nominated percussionist, band leader, and WBGO host, Bobby Sanabria. Always a pleasure, Bobby.
Yes, indeed. As always, Doug, thank you so much.
Bobby will be joining Nanny, and there is a host of great musicians who will be a part of this lineup, including, of course, Ron Carter. We'll talk about that in a moment. But when it comes to the music of Antonio Carlos Jobim, it means so much to Nanny Assis. Nanny, tell us about why this artist, this composer, really has been a focal part of your music for quite some time now.
Yeah. Jobim back in my life, my music life, was nothing like it, you know. I mean, I can compare other jazz musicians and some other Brazilians, but it's not getting close to. I listen to many things, but Jobim is, to me, the best representative of what we want to show the people, what we want to, you know, represent our Brazilian music. You know, Brazilian music is so vast. And so the repertoire and songbook of Jobim. And I'm trying to focus now because, of course, he's a classical trained piano player and orchestrator and everything. We know all that. This is all ad for the beauty and the genius of Jobim. But there's always a period of time that he recorded a couple albums here in the United States. And this period of time, 60, 62 to 68, maybe Bob know even better than me. And on these albums, he used a lot of percussions and a lot of the language of Afro-Brazilian music. And one album in particular got my attention, and that album changed my life. I hear people say that a lot, but this happened to me. And the album, it's called Urubu. This album really, really make a phenomenal impact on me for the possibility of breaking barriers of classical music and popular music, and also be so incredibly important for the Brazilian music, because some scholar could listen to the music, some wonderful jazz musician could listen to this music, and also a simple person that doesn't have any knowledge of music, they would listen to that and feel inspired by. So I was one of those guys that could stop to listen to that album. You know, I know from the top to start to finish. And that album actually was the base conception that I used for both Rovanio, the album that I recently released. And also at the same time, I started to develop more the idea of Afro-Jobim and what it's represent for me and for what I want to say with that, you know what I mean? So all those conceptions came to me 2020 when we have a lot of time.
Oh, because of COVID, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you spell the name of the album so that our listeners and viewers can...
The album is called Afro-Jobim, but there's a subtitle for it. Afro-Jobim and the Many Shades of Black. Mm. I came out with this afterwards because it's a study I've been doing. I actually went to Rio a couple times with this purpose of study more deep Jobim's, you know, music and also his environment, you know what I mean? I came to the conclusion, man, we are not talking about a composer only, talk about a nation, you know what I mean? It's talk about the environment that made this genius create what he's created so beautifully. So
this
yeah.
This kind of reminds me of this Afro Jobim album in a parallel universe with an album that Sergio Mendes did called Primal Roots, where he explored the African heritage of Brazilian music. Like Jobim, Sergio Mendes became part of mainstream America with his group Sergio Mendes in Brazil 66. And before him, Jobim obviously became a part of mainstream America with his compositions, with his collaboration with Frank Sinatra, his appearances on mainstream American US TV, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, well, right now, there isn't a place in the world that somebody isn't playing one of Jobim's compositions. Right. In fact, our viewers, listeners can attest, if you go to any catered affair, especially a wedding, there's the cocktail hour, mm-hmm. and there's a small group of musicians, and what do they usually start playing? A bossa nova by, yes. by Jobim. Yeah.
I'm so glad you mentioned Sérgio Mendes, because there were so many players, so many part of this, what, you know, we kind of represent right now. And I can also say names, for example, João Donato. That's another big name that really play a big role as well in my life, music, my music life and everything. And Moacir Santos, I try to kind of play homage for all those amazing musicians that never have ways to, like Jobim did, Jobim collaborated with so many great ones, and that put him in the spotlight. So what I'm trying to do now is also put those composers as well in the spotlight. Especially the Afro-Brazilian composers. I can mention some of them, like a Pixinguinha, and I say Moacir Santos, and Dorival Caymmi from Bahia as well. So yeah, man, it's a really important moment in my career. I'd say I'm 56 years old, and I feel like I'm getting a big responsibility to just voice it. You know what I mean?
And you're. Relationship with Ron Carter continues to grow. Talk about how both of you became friends and became collaborators.
Yeah, it's a really happy moment for me too. A friend of mine introduced me to him by email, and I was about to record this album for Vinyl. This was the beginning of 2020. And this person said, okay, send the email to him, and especially send some music. He would love to hear your music first, and then he might call you. He might call a couple of days. So he come right away, and we start to talk about so many things that he lived with Jobim. He got it right away. And very soon we were in the studio already and recording. And yeah, you're right. After that recording took a little while to finish because it was the album that I was envisioned for so long. So it took 2 years to be ready. And we did many of the recordings overseas, right? We have a studio in New York, like an island. And actually I recorded bass and guitar and percussion in this studio. And I received tracks from all over the world, right? And that took a lot of time to do it. But because of that, many meetings and talking, we kind of become better friends, right? And Ron is like a family to me. I can say that by now. We have a wonderful relationship. And after the album, I did some production for Japanese people, from other people from Brazil, and I always have him play one or two songs on the project. And that also creates another environment that, as a producer, I invite him and tell him what I want from this. And unbelievable person to deal with in all levels. Professional level, I don't know anybody with that much of experience and model to tell others how to act in different environments. I really love to work with him. And also now we have this personal relationship that we go for dinner and you talk about other things. And it's really beautiful. I'm excited about this whole thing that happened.
And speaking of relationships, I would imagine, Bobby, both of you being, you know, acclaimed percussionists, you have this fraternity with Nanny, and I'm sure this has been something that, you know, that you guys can connect on, whether it's Afro-Cuban beats, whether it's Brazilian beats, whether it's bossa nova, you
You've experienced it both together, and I would imagine that this fraternity keeps on getting tighter and tighter, right?
Of course. Well, you know, we have one common thing. We have one thing very much in common, which is Africa, which is the root of the all of the rhythms that we do, whether it's the music of Tito Puente, whether it's the music of Jobim, whether it's the music of Nani or myself. So I'm really looking forward to this. In terms of the question you asked before, how did we meet Ron? And I knew, obviously, of Ron from recordings as a youth. And then I finally got to work with him on the Mambo Kings soundtrack. He played on one song, Beautiful Maria of My Soul, which is what we call in Cuban music a bolero, a romantic ballad. And it was so funny because when I walked into my booth, you know, I had the timbales set up already, and I look over, and it's Ron Carter, and he's tuning up, and I go, Mr. Carter, and he just nodded his head like a noble warrior and or king. He goes, it's a pleasure to meet you, and he just nodded his head again. And then over the years, we've gotten to, the last time I got to play with in some capacity with Ron was on the recent Christmas show, the Jazz Nativity.
I was there.
And, not this year, but last year Ron played, and he did a solo bass piece that had the audience spellbound. So I'm really looking forward to this. Ron has a lot of experience playing Brazilian music. He's, you know, what can I say? He's an icon. If you're not into Brazilian music, you're going to be very pleasantly surprised. It's going to be a nice gateway for everyone. And for those of you who know who Ron Carter is, it's a special treat to see him and hear him in this situation. But talking about Ron, let's talk about a little bit about Nani. Nani's background is fascinating. He's not only a percussionist, he's a drummer. He's a composer, arranger. He plays bass, he plays guitar, he plays piano, and his voice is just gorgeous. He's got a gorgeous, gorgeous voice. You know, every once in a while we get blessed with special talents, and Nani is one of them. And his last recording that we've played many times on BGO, not only on my show, but on all the other programs throughout the multiverse that has WBGO, is Rovanio, which is, tell us a little bit about the title, which refers to your birth name, and also where you're from in Brazil, which is the center of African-rooted culture, Bahia, yeah. In the northeastern yeah. part of Brazil.
Yeah, I was born in Salvador, Bahia, yeah. And just by, you know, being born in there, I think that gave to me a lot of information right there, because you have the everything, including Afro-Cuban music, everything you would listen in Brazil, in Bahia. We have like 75% of the population are Afro-descendant. And funny thing is, I gotta tell you, this is brand new stuff. I hesitated for a little bit, but now I did this test, ancestral test, right? Just recently. I use a very reliable company, a lab in Brazil, and they took my blood and everything, and they came out with the result. I knew already, but they came out result 2 weeks ago, and I have 33% of my DNA from a place called Costa Mina, which is basically, I don't know if you know Costa Mina, but it's Benin, Togo, Nigeria, Ghana. So 33% of my DNA is from there. My ancestors from there. And then Portuguese and indigenous people. My mother's side get a lot of indigenous. So it makes me so happy to, I mean, I knew that already. Of course, we are all blended there. But yeah, from Bahia, it's really difficult to take that from Baianos. You know, people say that Baiano doesn't learn that they just show up, you know what I mean? So there's a saying that, but it's ridiculous how much information you can get in that place. and so many different rhythms, right? You just get exposed for a lot. And as I said to you before, Jobim was one of the main composers that inspired me. But you also asked a question about the album, right? So the album Rovânio, as I mentioned to Doug before, I really wanted to do this album for so long. I never had a time and the money to do it. So in 2020, I started and said, well, you know what, I'm going to just dive into it. And I picked many of the compositions that I had for a while, and I started to work. And I like so much the result that I actually put my signature, my real name. Nobody knew my new name before. Everybody knew it was Melanani. And now everybody calls me, including Bobby, Rovânio, which is really interesting. So the album is I would say that is my signature, is like a something that I would say, okay, this is me. You know, I really put all I know on this album. It's my soul in here. You can say that I kind of mix the very popular music from the street with some really beautiful orchestration and arrangement from a great composer in Brazil. So the CD got that. The album got this. I actually have a vinyl as well. It got these two worlds that should be represented so wonderful, so genius, you know. So I'm trying to walk in the footstep of my master.
So you talked about ancestry, and Bobby talked about your wonderful voice. Well, your son has joined in your footsteps now and is a wonderful singer as well, and he'll be performing as part of this special night. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like performing with your son, and also the wide range of artists that are going to be a part of this event?
Yeah, working with my son is kind of scary, man, because it's super scary because this guy is unbelievable. When I was about 17, he's already after high school, and we have to decide what to do in life. And I sit down with him and say, listen, I want you to do what you really want to put your head, you know. And we have some options, and he said, Daddy, I want to pursue music. And my wife is a lawyer, so we have this other balance. Say, no, this is not going to happen. You're not going to go for music. You're not going to spend that much money in school for music. And, you know, he actually come to my idea, my side, and be listening to music since he's a baby. We put everything to him, so he got all that. But I say this is scary because each day I haven't seen him in a while. He got a job in a church in Florida, so I haven't seen him in a couple of months. But every time I see him, he come out with something new and some, you know, singing better. His voice is getting better and better and better. He's only 25 years old.
Boy.
So it's scary, but I'm so happy. I tell him that he's the only, I'm the only man who wants him to succeed and get better than me. I tell him all the time, I want you to get better than me, always, in everything you do. So it's a wonderful relationship. I was telling him that if he wasn't my son, that would be his son anyway.
Oh, that's great. That's a very nice thing to say. Your son, right?
Yeah. Now we are very close, and I'm so happy that he was able to do it, especially because it's a Tuesday night and he can fly in and play. So he's in the album as well. Actually, he put in the album, and I do have the whole album from him. I produced the whole thing for him, but he's holding on. I don't know why he doesn't want to release this album now. And the album with amazing friends and musicians like Sullivan Ford and Mark Gilmore, Boris Kozlov. You know, the album is like unbelievable. I can't wait to release that. But he doesn't want to do this now. He's waiting for something. Anyway, but it's amazing to be working with him. And this lineup of 24 is like a dream lineup.
The night will also feature the vocals of WBGO's very own Leslie Harrison. Once again, Afro Jobim with Ron Carter will be this coming Tuesday at Dizzy's Club in New York City. You can see my entire conversation with Nanny Assis and Bobby Sanabria on the WBGO YouTube channel. Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.